Welcome to the Filmmaker Mixer Podcast, the podcast by filmmakers for filmmakers. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined alongside my co-host Jeff, as always. Jeff and I are writers and directors and passionate about the art of storytelling. Filmmaker Mixer is a creative hub where aspiring and established filmmakers come together to share experiences, insights, strategies, and inspiration. Today we have on filmmaker, actress, and podcast creator, Laura Hunter-Drago.
Hello, everybody. This is the Filmmaker Mixer Podcast, and today we are chatting with Laura Hunter-Drago. Laura is an award-winning producer, screenwriter, and occasional actress living in Los Angeles, California. She produces feature films and audio drama podcasts through her production companies New Girl Pictures and Dragon Hunter Productions. So, Laura, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Nice to meet you guys.
Yeah, it's great to meet you. And, you know, it's kind of crazy. You and I connected online a few months ago, and we've been trying to get you scheduled on the show. You were busy and we're busy and, you know, we're going back and forth. And sometimes it takes some time to set these up. But what's weird is in the time frame it took us to set up this podcast, you won another award. You got the Fiction Podcast Award at the 2023 Austin Film Festival for your script, The Crime at Camp Ashwood. So that's awesome. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. And Andrew and I were here covering the Austin Film Festival. And I'm really sorry we didn't get to, you know, meet up in person while you were here. But tell us about your experience. Tell us about your time in Austin and what is the crime at Camp Ashwood?
Yeah, it's funny. It's actually probably good we weren't trying to connect that weekend because I was so stressed out. Like it's
Andrew's got a good calming vibe. He would have calmed you down.
Okay, maybe I would have needed that. Yeah. No, once the award ceremony was over, I was totally fine and ready to have a good time. But before that, I was very surprised at how nervous I was. Just you know, when you don't know what you're going to be dealing with, or if you're going to have to make an acceptance speech or something, it's actually more overwhelming than I was anticipating. So yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a neat experience and a lot of fun. And the podcast,
I was going to say, tell us about the award, because we were actually there in the same building doing some interviews, because I remember when people were coming out. I'm surprised we didn't run into you, but tell us about that. So you were there, you were one of the nominees, and what was it like when they finally called your name?
Well, as I said, I was very nervous like leading up, but the actual award ceremony was really pretty cool. It was nice that the way they schedule it, they have all of the nominees for, like, in my category, the screenwriting contest, and then for the indie filmmakers first. And then after that, they have some awards they give out to, more established people. So it was nice that we all went first and got it out of the way. And then we got to listen to some really cool speeches from, like, James V. Hart was there. Wow. And Court Jefferson and Damon Lindelof. It was pretty cool. So it was nice that we actually got to, like, appreciate the speeches from the quote unquote names after we got sort of the nerves out of the way. But it was neat. I mean, I will say, I was very nervous up until the point that my name was actually called, and then I felt like great. So that was something to learn about myself, I guess, that, it was fine once I actually needed to go up and say something, but very nerve-wracking beforehand. But it was fun. It was like a little, luncheon, and they, run it kind of like a regular award show, play clips from the winners and stuff like that. So it was cool.
That's cool. Well, tell us about The Crime at Camp Ashwood. What's that about?
Yeah. So this is an audio fiction podcast. It's a crime mystery, murder mystery set at a summer camp in Asheville, North Carolina. I did go to a summer camp in Asheville, North Carolina, but no one ever died there. It was lovely. I just loved summer camp and I wanted to find a way to write about it. But I do want to be clear, no one died. But in this, someone does. And so we're, it's a cool little mystery that we're going on the journey of. And the first episode came out the week after Austin. So we're going every 2 weeks now through like April. To the end of the show. So it should be a fun little ride, I hope, for people.
Oh, cool. Well, tell people where they can find it.
Yeah, so it's on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, basically anywhere you would listen to podcasts.
Sure.
And yeah, you can just follow, subscribe. And yeah, we also do with Spotify, you like little polls and stuff. So you can like guess who the possible culprit is and things like that. So we're trying to make it a little bit interactive. And yeah, it's fun. It's fully cast. So that's been a cool experience. And I also edit and produce it myself. So I'm like playing, you know, I have a lot of hats going on here. So it's been pretty fun. It's nice. I enjoy it. We have my production company has another podcast that I don't write, but I'm in and I edit, called St. Mary's School for Children with the Stigmata. Right. And that has been a really fun experience. And it was a cool way to like get into podcasting. I like really recommend it for people that want to write and want to have a way to put their work out there without having to spend an incredible amount of money. Because we know that filmmaking is very expensive and podcasting can be done on a little bit of a shoestring. So it's been a cool way to connect with a lot of people that I wasn't really anticipating. We kind of started that during the pandemic and I've just kept doing it. So very fun.
Yeah. And that podcast was actually named one of the 10 best horror podcasts by the Mary Sue. I'm curious, is that what led you to create Camp Ashwood, or is this kind of a different venture?
Yeah, so this is it's a very different story, but the experience of St. Mary's and how popular it's been without us having to do a huge amount of marketing really just kind of turned me on to like, oh, wow, this is a great way to reach an audience and put something out there. And I started out as an actor, got into producing, and then it really in the last couple of years started writing. And I was like, you know, it's so hard to just find a way to get your work out there. And I felt like I needed a kind of calling card project as a writer. So that was sort of the impetus behind. I'd always wanted to write a summer camp thing. and so it just sort of, I don't know why, when I started writing this one, it was kind of like a first draft and done kind of thing. Like it just sort of came out of me, which has been really cool. That's not normally how I write. So yeah, it's St. Mary's was a great like jumping off point for just learning that there's this whole audience for audio fiction there that I had no idea about.
And is that the genre you like? It sounds like both of these fall into, you know, sort of that thriller mystery, you know, kind of darker category. Mm-hmm. Is that what you lean toward, or is that just what you're into currently?
Yeah, I in general, I write kind of weird, very dark, darkly funny comedic thriller sort of things. And the murder mystery thing, is big for me. That's also what I watch. So my parents are like, why is it this? Why can't it be rom-coms? But every time, like if I start writing a rom-com, eventually like 5 pages in, someone's dead, you know, like I don't know what comes over me. That's how my brain works. So yeah, it's interesting, but I enjoy the dark side of things. And it's always been, I was like a huge, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan growing up, and I watch a lot of horror, and so it's just been my kind of area. I have no real explanation other than that.
Staying on like writing and everything, you've worked on screenplays and podcasts. Of course, screenplays are meant to be visual and podcasts are meant to be audio and audio experience. I'm curious what your process for approaching each of these different mediums are creatively and maybe even logistically.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it's helped me a lot in terms of the podcasting that I also edit audio, because I have a pretty good sense of what does and doesn't work in terms of sound. Like, and it's weird stuff where like crying can sound like laughing on audio, things like that, you know, so you learn kind of as you go. But I think in a way it's lucky that I had already been into audio editing for my day job. So it was something that I was able to pick up pretty easily. And so when you write for that, it's very, very different. And I've actually been, my intention is to develop Ashwood as a TV pilot as well. And just even trying to like take that initial idea and convert it over for television, I realized very quickly how different it's going to have to be. Because you just, the visual stuff is so different. I think for the podcasting, to me, for both the series that we've done, there is a primary narrator in any episode that we do, which is not something that I would do in a screenplay, because you want it to be much more visual. So, you know, you don't want a whole bunch of voiceover in a screenplay typically. And so it's a little bit different. It's a lot more like monologue driven. And you're thinking about things that would kind of like awaken people. I sort of think, you know, when I'm writing for a screenplay, you spend a lot of time thinking about the visuals, and it's really just doing that, but with audio in mind. So it's, you know, it's the same skill set. It's just, you kind of have to like reframe your mind for how is somebody going to visualize this in their own head rather than you giving them the visual.
I'm curious, do you, my wife thinks I'm crazy because I listen to old time radio a lot, because I've always been a big fan of that. Have you listened to, I know there's a lot of great audio podcasts currently out there, some really great ones, you know, mysteries and thrillers and comedies, but I'm curious, do you ever go back to any like old school radio stuff to get inspiration for how you set up a podcast?
You know, I really don't. I hate to admit this, but I actually have a really hard time listening to audio myself. Like, I've never been an audio book person. I'm
interesting.
I can create it, but it's for me, I actually really need the visual. Even when I'm reading a book, I like to like have the book in my hands. I don't know if it's like, you know, something's wrong with me that I actually have kind of a hard time following just audio. So, and maybe that's it. It actually is an asset when I'm editing my own stuff, because I think I'm maybe even more, I try to be more explicit when I edit so that it helps people along. But I have had some friends who have like theater production companies and stuff who will put on almost like high level table reads that are sort of like the old radio drama type things. And that's, it's very similar to what we're doing with this, with where it's fully cast, because I know that a lot of what's out there in terms of audio fiction is not always fully cast. I do know that. So I think that that's something a little bit, I know that people are like craving when they are looking for stuff. But no, I haven't gone back into like the archives or anything. Maybe I should try. I'm trying to get better about it. I really am, because I really love the medium, and I think it's such a cool way for new creators to get their stuff out there. But I just personally have such a hard time with it. I shouldn't admit that since I have two podcasts. But I do. I have a hard time like following. I think I just get distracted.
Well, I'm curious, you know, podcasts, because you know, anybody can really set it up and do it, and you can, you know, you can just get your work out there without, you know, spending a ton of money. Does that inspire you to be a little more risky with story ideas, or do you take more chances because you don't have that?
Oh, totally.
Weight on your, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you don't have anywhere near the same budget restraints in terms of like, if I'm going to visualize some huge, say like a fight scene or a big, you know, there's like an enormous dance with a bunch of people, I can make that with sound really easily for the same price that I could basically any other sound. So you know, when you're writing a screenplay, you have to be very, the feature I'm currently finishing is a low budget that I'm hoping to produce myself in my hometown, and so that has been, I've been very, very focused on making sure that I'm writing to budget. And it's, you know, that's just a whole other skill set and something that you have to kind of like force yourself, you know, creatively to be happy with what you're writing, but also to know like, hey, can I afford to make this? And with audio, you don't really have to think about that at all. I mean, the only thing in terms of just number of cast members, because you're paying, I mean, hopefully you're paying your cast, you know, things like that. You know, I try to keep it to a small cast also because people's voices can be so similar even when I'm casting these things. Like, I always try really hard to make sure that the voices are going to be different enough that people can pick them apart. So you don't want to have too many people because I think it overwhelms.
Makes so sense. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. This one is only four actors. So, and I think that's a good number. I think St. Mary's, we have four or five. So try to keep it fairly small.
I'm curious too, because we talk a lot about filmmaking. We haven't really delved into, you know, the podcast space as much. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how similar or different, you know, making your own podcast, like you're talking about casting and stuff, is compared to, you know, just traditional movie making. Are there go-to voiceover actors in the podcast space that are like more well-known that'll help you get, you know, distribution or just listens, mm-hmm. plays, whatnot? I'm curious about that end of it.
Yeah, I mean, I do know that there's definitely podcasts out there that cast like name actors that you would see in feature films, you know, the like a, you know, Oscar winning actors that are doing podcasts. But I also think there's a lot of opportunity. To me, it's more of an equal playing field. Like, obviously, if you're going to get, you know, Jodie Foster or someone in your podcast, that's going to get a lot of listens automatically. But I do think if it's, I've been trying to encourage even people within my own screenwriting groups who are frustrated and, you know, like tired of sending out query emails and not getting any response. And I'm like, yeah, just find a way to, you know, write something that could be made this way, because from a production standpoint, it's pretty inexpensive. I mean, I'm lucky that I can edit, so I think that that cuts out a huge expense, but you know, it's just a good way to be able to get your work out there. And I've been, you know, we don't have anyone who's a quote unquote name in St. Mary's, which has been out for a little over a year now. And the listeners that we've had, it's just like shocking. I mean, it's pretty cool, and not a lot of marketing money spent. There's just a pretty good algorithm. Like Spotify has us, you know, if you're listening to one podcast that's similar, it'll give you suggestions at the end of other ones, and ours will come up and someone will find us. And we even have people on like Reddit who are, you know, they're posting their little theories like it's a TV show, and it's so cool. It's like they're real fans. And it is, you kind of run it like your own little personal mini TV show. And I think that's a cool way to get your stuff out there. I mean, I'm a big proponent of that in general, if not kind of waiting for, you know, the industry to come to you to find a way to put your voice to the world. So yeah, I think it's a really good way to do that. And if you're a screenwriter who's like, I wish someone would see or hear, you know of my work at all, I think it's a good thing to consider if you could make something an audio. Because actually St. Mary's, which is the other podcast, was originally going to be a short film.
Oh, wow.
And the script had been written for that. And we had done like a table read and stuff. And this was during the pandemic. And we just realized like there was no way we were going to get that done during that time period, just because of all the different restrictions and stuff and the expense. And we were just a little burnt out because we had made another film, and we were like, hey, a lot of people are into podcasts. Like, why don't we try it? And it just ended up being this really cool thing. So yeah, I think it's an interesting medium to get into. And there's a lot there. There's so many people making really cool stuff.
Well, I want to pick your producer brain a little bit. I'm curious, do you use any particular system to organize like your casting and your scheduling and keeping on target? You know, I mean, you know, there's so many different apps, to-do apps and different things you can use. Do you have any tips in that, in the organizational
sure.
area?
Sure. Yeah. Well, for casting, I mean, I just use Breakdown Services, which essentially goes to like Actors Access. If you're an actor, I'm sure, you know, I started out as an actor, so I'm always on the actor thing. But actually, I mean, that's another area where there's just a wealth of people. There are so many people now who have great at-home setups for recording. We do everything remotely. Everyone records in their home. And then I piece it all together at the end. And we've had, for all of the roles that we've cast for podcasts, just hundreds of amazing auditions come in through just Breakdowns postings. And it's been a really cool way to even find new actors. There's even people that I've liked but didn't cast in that particular thing, and then like contacted later for a table read or something else that I was working on. So it's been a nice way to meet people, and it's so fast, because you're just having them, you know, record audio. And so it's cool. And it's amazing how, you know, 10 years ago, people didn't have the setups to do that in their home. For the most part, it would have been really expensive. So it's neat that it's opened up so much. In terms of like scheduling and tracking, I honestly just use my Google Drive and make my own spreadsheets for that kind of stuff. And have like the episodes scheduled out. I know like when our social media stuff is going out from that. And I mean, I work in marketing for my day job, so it's the same kind of setup that I would use for that. But yeah, it works pretty well. And then I can put everybody else in the cast on the drive, and they can check and make sure they know when stuff is due. I usually do episodes in batches, so they'll record like three at a time, and they're each like 15 minutes long. So it's basically like, that's kind of one quote unquote TV episode, if you want to look at it that way, like 45 minutes.
You know, I'd love to rewind a little bit and kind of circle back to how you first started your career. Jeff and I grew up in a small town in Illinois, and I know you were originally from a small town in Virginia. Could you tell us a little bit how you got the bug for storytelling and acting and what that journey was like from that small town to where you are today?
I was lucky that I got put into theater early. My elementary school, you were like required to be in the class play every year. And I think if that hadn't been the case, I probably never would have gotten into it because I was like incredibly shy as a child, like almost never spoke. And I remember one year they like drew the roles for the cast of the school play out of a hat. And I got like the lead role. And the teacher was like, "Oh, Laura, it's okay. Like, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to take it." And I was like, "No, I want to do it." And I think they were all like terrified. I think they were like, "Oh no, this is going to be like so awkward for everyone who goes because this girl never talks." And then I ended up being really good at it. I think I just like, it helped me come into my own in a way. I don't know why I was so shy, but like I needed to play someone else, I guess, to sort of get my bearings a little bit at that age. So I think I fell in love with it from there. And just, you know, whenever anyone asked what I wanted to be when I grew up from that age on, I was, I want to be an actor. And I did like community theater. I did theater in high school. I went to NYU Tisch for college for acting. And then I spent, you know, a decade in LA auditioning and pounding pavement. I mean, the small town thing, I think I'm, as a kid, I really wanted to get out of there. And now I look back on it and I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I grew up in a place that wasn't New York or LA. Because I just think it shaped me in a totally different way than I would have. I probably would have been very disillusioned to the industry had I grown up in a major city or an entertainment town. So I feel lucky.
And you were talking about your next project wanting to shoot in, did you say in your hometown? Oh,
So
interesting.
actually, my husband and I met in an acting class in New York City, got paired together in a scene, and then realized we had the same area code.
Oh, wow.
Then came to realize that we had actually grown up 3 blocks away from each other in this
What?
tiny town, no Starbucks in this town, like teeny,
That's
you know,
crazy.
like less than 10,000 people live there. So anyway, so we've always wanted to eventually go back and make something there. And so I wrote this with him in mind. He's an actor, and you know, so we're putting it together hopefully to maybe get back in the next year, year and a half, and actually get the thing made. So it'd be fun. It's a holiday crime mystery. So I put Christmas in there because, you know, that's at least not totally creepy.
So is it like fun sort of campy crime, or is it dark?
It's pretty dark. Yeah, it's very much in the vibe of like a Christmas Carol, and I've also gotten some like Fargo in my notes. Some people have said, oh, like Three Billboards or Fargo kind of vibes. But definitely inspired by A Christmas Carol, sort of a newish spin on that.
Interesting. Well, your first feature, To the New Girl, won Best Feature for a first-time filmmaker at the what was it, the Queen Palm International Film Festival, I think.
That's right, yeah.
So let's circle back to that
Sure.
project. What was the genesis of that project? How did that idea come about, and how did you get on board to produce?
Sure. So my very, very good friend from high school, a little tiny Catholic high school in Virginia, became a very successful playwright. And I had gone to see an early reading of her play called To the New Girl, which is very similar in tone to like the Vagina Monologues. It's 10 monologues for women who are all reading letters to the new woman in their ex's life. And so it's sort of all over the place from like people that are really angry at their ex to people that wish them well, and a wide age range. We have like from age 20 to, I think, the oldest actor in the film was 83 at the time that we filmed. And so I had seen this reading and I thought it was really interesting in a cool way, to maybe think about making an independent film because it was just a very simple concept. I knew that if I ever made a feature for my first feature, I would have to make something very inexpensive. And so this seemed like a cool way to do that. And we essentially took the idea of the concept is just that they're reading these letters and then they sort of act out what's happening. And that wasn't really going to work for our budget. So we actually turned it into like an open mic night almost. I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary Mortified, but it's people reading their like middle school diaries aloud. And I loved it. I was a big fan. I was like, oh, it'd be so cool if this was kind of like that. Like where they're just getting up in front of an audience to like read these letters and sort of have this cathartic kind of night. And so I brought that to my friend, Samantha Mocker, who had written the play. And I said, hey, what if we make this into a movie? I have some friends I think would be on board. I, at the time, was writing and the assistant editor in chief of a website called Ms. in the Biz that was all about women in the arts and getting especially more women behind the camera into positions of power. And so we said, oh, you know what, this is an all-female cast. Why don't we make it an all-female cast and crew? And so that kind of made the project really interesting to a lot of people. And we did like a Kickstarter and took it from there. But yeah, it was like a 6-year adventure.
One of the things that, you know, good producers and directors do is build a safe environment where the actors can be vulnerable and do their best work at times. And since you've been an actor and also producer, I wonder if you have a unique perspective on that process of creating that safe space or any tips and tricks.
Yeah, this is a big thing for me, actually. Thank you for asking that. I do. I have like a big sensitivity to actors when I'm auditioning or when I'm doing anything with them, because I do. It's such a hard profession to be in. There's so much rejection and also just so much vulnerability. For this project specifically, we were asking them to do these like, you know, 10, 12 minute monologues. It's a lot. And we shot this in 3 days. I should have probably led with that.
Wow.
So there was not a lot of time. So everyone probably had, you know, 3 to 5 takes to nail this, which makes it was very much like a filmed theater performance, really. And so I was specific in casting, in knowing that I wanted everyone to be comfortable, to look for people that also had a theater background, which I think worked really well. Something else that I, you know, just taking into consideration, you know, things on set that make actors more comfortable. I spent a lot of time looking for the right makeup artist, which I think sounds a little crazy, but just like that's the last person who's with the actor usually before they're, or at least the last person who's like having kind of a longer conversation when they're sort of like preparing and getting their, you know, their mind right before they go on. And I have had personally some bad experiences with makeup and hair people in the past where they've just been rude or just said something that just didn't really quite sit right with me right before I was supposed to go do something. And I was like, no, I need to find somebody. And so we found this great girl and I actually had a lot of the actors afterwards come up to me and say like, oh, she was so nice. And I was like, good, thank God, because I spent so much time making sure that I like actually sat down and had coffee with the person. But yeah, I think just generally being aware overall when you're like picking crew of people that would jive together. I think, you know, the fact that we were doing an all woman thing, people were very much into having it to be this nice experience for everyone. I think it kind of put people in a mindset of like, oh, this is really cool. Like, and so it was also a lot of people's first feature. I think it was our cinematographer's first feature, our director. So, you know, a lot of people were just really excited, which I think is a great energy. I just try to find people that, you know, are going to be enthusiastic and want to be there and are kind. I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, as you know, someone who's been on both sides of the camera, I'm curious, do you have a preference between producing versus acting and actually even screenwriting? I know you do that as well. I mean, do you just love all three, or do you sort of get drawn to one over the other at different times? Or tell me how you balance all that.
Yeah, I think for me, the acting stuff has kind of, I'll say this and then who knows, but the ship has sort of sailed emotionally for me. I don't know that I can like go back to being like auditioning, like as like a waitress, asking somebody how they take their coffee. Like, I don't know. I just got like very drained artistically by it, where I realized one day that I was like, oh my gosh, I've spent my whole life saying other people's words. Maybe I should write something else down from me. So yeah, I mean, I think producing for me comes very naturally. Like, I'm just a person that likes to organize and likes to rally people. So I think that's something that like kind of is just almost comes like second nature to me. But writing, I have just totally fallen in love with in the last 5 years. And it's kind of where my heart is at now. So I'm just trying to focus there. And then sometimes the other stuff, you know, the podcast I'm producing, obviously I also act in it. I don't know if I mentioned that, but I do. and so that's sort of like, oh, well, that made sense. It's a lot easier to have me play the lead in the podcast, because when I'm editing, if I need to change something or fix something, I'm right there to do it. So it's just practical decision most of the time. But it's also fun for me. It's like kind of a last little piece of that part of my life. And then producing, it's like, you know, if I'm writing something like this Virginia film, and I think, oh, you know, I could probably make that, then I'll sort of like jump on that. But I think it, for the most part at this point, like where I want to put my time and energy is into the writing.
So as an editor, do you, and you need a voice change, do you email yourself as the actor and then the actor picks up the email and says, oh, I can take care.
I literally will like be actively editing and just like turn my mic on and re-record the line like into the, I mean, it's just much easier when it's you. I will say that.
Well, you know, speaking of screenwriting and actually just having come off the, you know, the Austin Film Festival, which is, you know, a writer-centric festival, mm-hmm. What's your process of screenwriting? Are you a beat sheet person? Do you write treatments? How do you approach a story? Do you have the ending figured out when you start? I know we talked to another writer that's like, I will not start a screenplay unless I know what the ending is going to be, even if that ending changes. You know, yeah. I won't start until I know that. What's your process?
Yeah, I feel that. I feel wanting to know where it ends before I start. I think when I wrote my first feature, I was very much flying by the seat of my pants. And I think that was the right thing to do when I was learning, because I wrote like 200 drafts of that. and it really made me like understand the process, but I would never do that again. No, I'm somebody who really starts out from theme. And so I spend a lot of time, if I have like a certain kind of overarching question I'm struggling with or something that I just find interesting, I'll then spend a lot of time brainstorming just a whole bunch of different ideas about that subject or that question. And like, so, oh, how could I illustrate this way? Yeah.
So are you saying you're drawn to a theme about a story before the plot's figured out? Is that what you mean? Or
yes. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. So like, for example, a spec I was working on a few years ago, I had this experience in my own life with genetic testing that was very stressful, where I'd had like a family member with an illness, and then I had to like wait and see if I had the thing. And it made me think a lot about fortune telling and like people who are looking for answers about their future. And so then I spent a bunch of time just thinking about the different ways that people seek, you know, either through religion or through a literal tarot reading or in something like gambling. And so that kind of just like led me to, you know, this is the topic I'm really interested in talking about. What's a story within that? And so I ended up with this story about a fortune teller in Las Vegas. So yeah, it starts out for me with sort of an idea of like, this is something my brain is kind of obsessed with. and like, what's the story from there? But then before I actually sit down to write, I definitely have like a full treatment written out, pretty clear idea of at least the major beats. And then it, you know, as I'm writing, it either changes wildly or not.
Do you set certain guidelines on your writing time? Because a lot of writers will ask Andrew and I, you know, should I just write when I want to write? Do I set a schedule? What do you do?
I'm pretty strict with myself when I'm actively writing. So like right now I'm not working on anything. I'm planning on like giving myself a break through the end of the year. And then in January, starting again, when I start again, if I'm actively writing something, I try to spend at least an hour a day every weekday on it. And then a lot of times that turns into 3 or 4 hours one day, or maybe that 1 hour was really painful and I just leave it the rest of that day. So I try a little bit to like structure. I have a day job in marketing. I try really hard to like structure my week so that I'm getting that kind of any work I need to do for that done like Monday, Tuesday, and then hopefully like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I can have a longer day spent on writing. But I'm pretty strict with myself about touching it every day. Because I find that if I leave it for a week or something, then I'm kind of, it's a lot more like ramp up to start back over. So yeah, I'm pretty, committed to that when I'm actively working on something, but you do, I think, need breaks in between. And then in terms of like how long I would spend on any script, like, I don't know that I would put a time limit on that, 'cause it's so different. Sure. You know, the Virginia thing I wrote in like 2 months, and that was really fast for me. I've spent, you know, like a year on something before, or you know, 6 months, or I don't know that I would put a timeline on that, because it's just depends on what it is you're working on, and like what, if you have to research, if you have, you know, there's just a million different factors. And then, you know, when you're writing stuff, sometimes it turns into something you didn't expect, and I think you have to leave room for that. Sure. So yeah, I don't think I would say like, oh, I have to get this done in. I tried to do National Novel Writing Month for a screenplay last year. And it was like, I realized very quickly, I was like, no, I'm never going to write something in 1 month.
Well, Laura, it's been great having you on the show. Congratulations again on the Austin Film Festival win. That's really crazy that happened in the time we've been trying to get you on the show. So that's awesome. So congratulations on that. And tell people where they can find you, follow your work. Are you an Instagram person? How can people track you down and find what you're working on?
Sure. So yeah, I am an Instagram person, I guess I would say. And it's just my full name, Laura Hunter Drago. And that has links out to both my production companies. I'm on Twitter as Laura H. Drago, and my website is laurahunterdrago.com. So I think you can find all of the links to The New Girl and podcasts and things like that from all of those.
Well, Laura, it's been great having you on the show. You've been a pleasure to talk to. Congratulations again on that Austin Film Festival win. And definitely circle back when you're working on something new. We'd love to have you on the show again.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I'd love it.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Filmmaker Mixer podcast, a podcast created and hosted by filmmakers Jeff Stolen and Andrew Lamping, and produced by Melody Lopez.
Our theme song was composed by Stephen D. Bennett.
Make sure to follow or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on, and stay tuned for future episodes.